You're listening to the Happy Doc Student Podcast, a podcast dedicated to providing clarity to the often mysterious doctoral process. Do you feel like you're losing your mind? Let me and my guests show you how to put more joy in your journey and graduate with your sanity, health, and relationships intact.
I'm your host, Dr. Heather Frederick, and today I'm chatting with Dr. Lauren Saunders. Laura is the Vice President of Editing and Research for Dissertation Editor, where she previously served as an editor and managing editor. She earned her master's in Irish literature from Trinity College, Dublin, and her PhD from the University of Denver. She recently co-published a book, PH Done, A Professional Editor's Guide to Writing Your Doctoral Thesis and Earning Your PhD, and I am very much looking forward to discussing one of the last chapters in that book and a topic I get frequent questions about, which is, why should I publish my dissertation and how should I go about doing that? Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather.
Why don't we spend just a few minutes with you sharing how you got involved with dissertation editor?
Yeah, absolutely. So that kind of starts with my whole progress through higher education. So I started off in undergrad majoring in dance and creative writing and being interested in writing. I started working in the Writing Center and really enjoyed the act of helping both undergraduate and graduate students with their writing. And then graduating with those degrees, I thought, what's the logical next course of action? And a master's degree seemed to be the right fit. So then kind of continued on through higher education and then a PhD. And one of the things I enjoyed the most throughout that whole process and primary job on campus during my PhD was another Writing Center role. And I really enjoyed the process of writing my own dissertation and always enjoyed that type of work. And then as my graduate funding was starting to run out, I had just met my now husband, who is from Northern Ireland, and we needed to be traveling back and forth between the two and traveling elsewhere. And I thought, what can I do with this degree and with this interest that I can work remotely? And then that's when I stumbled upon dissertation editor and started off as a freelance editor and have been with the company ever since.
It is such a critically important role that you play helping others understand how to articulate what's in their head in a way that a committee is going to accept it. It's no small thing.
Absolutely. And it's been so interesting to me to see just how dissertations work as a genre of writing across such a broad range of fields. I remember one of my very first Writing Center consultations was with a graduate student who was working on a thesis on the chemical properties of cactus juice. And that was kind of my first introduction to the fact that, you know, no matter how far outside of your subject matter expertise, there are things about the dissertation or thesis document that just need to be structured in a way that the scientific community, the research community, whatever field that's in can understand.
Well, Lauren, from dancing and creative writing to cactus juice, that's quite an adventure. So you all have worked with hundreds, I don't know, maybe even thousands of students. And as you accumulated this experience, you decided, let's put together a book to walk people through kind of the best practices that we've seen with all the people that we worked with. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's some of that technical component about the fact that dissertations share these characteristics and have to include, you know, certain things in certain ways to work well. And similarly, in a personal sense, you know, graduate students share these experiences and we can feel really isolated as graduate students and as members of the academic community. So I think it's nice to hear that others are going through the same struggles. And that's why we tried to include so many real anecdotes in the book.
I appreciated those stories. It broke up the reading as well. You know, you give the context, you give the content, and then a story, a real life story to go along with it. I thought that was a really nice touch. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was enjoyable to recall all those stories and to kind of pool our resources. And hey, remember that client? And, you know, it was fun to go through and, you know, change all the names and the identifying details, but to keep the heart of all the real stories and experiences.
And your book is geared towards helping people finish, but something that a lot of students kind of, you know, it's kind of this thing where unless you have a really strong chair who's committed to continuing to work with you, at least that's my experience, after, you know, you have your defense, they shake your hand. The dissertation often sits, well, I visualize it, sitting on a shelf getting dusty in the library. So your book goes an extra step and talks about, okay, not only are you done, but now why should you care about getting this thing published? And let's talk about how you might go about doing that. So why don't we start with the why? Why would someone, after all this pain and suffering, and they probably don't want to look at this document ever again, or at least for a while, why should they think about getting it published?
Absolutely. Well, and I'll start by noting that my computer is definitely not currently resting on mine and my husband's doctoral dissertations to elevate the screen slightly. So it's not dusty, but it's also not being read currently. So in terms of the why, And it can be really difficult once you finish the degree and, you know, you've been through such an ordeal, and it's really helpful and healthy to take a break from it, certainly, but the break can tend to turn into months and years if you haven't figured out why you want to move forward with it. And I think that a lot of people get stuck on the classic reason to publish your dissertation as a book, which is to advance your career in academia and eventually put it in your tenure portfolio and to move forward in that line of work. And obviously that's an important reason if that's your goal to publish articles and a book from your dissertation. If you're moving forward into an academic role, it's imperative to do that, but that's far from the only reason to do it. And I would say that, you know, as we're moving into an age where content and personal brand is so important, your dissertation can easily become a first book geared toward a much more general interest readership to advance whatever other professional goals you may have in mind. So what we see a lot of people trying to consider how to turn their dissertation into a book for a much broader readership, whether it looks like, you know, op-ed pieces or other short form writing or a book geared more toward, you know, a broad general interest nonfiction readership. And then I think there's a really, really undervalued third reason to publish, and that's just for the pride of getting something you've worked so hard on out to a bigger audience. And even if you don't have, I would say, either a totally clear academic or professional goal in mind, I think it's a really worthwhile endeavor just to try to get your work, your original research, because you've made a contribution to your field of study, into the hands of more readers.
Yes, you ask a question in that chapter to the reader. You say, how many dissertations did you read before you started graduate school? The answer is probably zero. And it always breaks my heart to think that someone has spent years of their life becoming an expert in this area, writing about it, creating new knowledge, you know, new insights, and then it's just going to sit there and no one's ever going to read it again. So I love those reasons that you give. Now, as you were talking, I was thinking, I've had students say to me, well, my dissertation's about the size of a book. It looks like a book. And they're sending me this paperwork to publish it on ProQuest. So isn't my dissertation already published as a book?
Great point. Yeah, I get that a lot, too, that sort of, my dissertation has been published by ProQuest, so I'm done. And ProQuest is, you know, it's a great repository for dissertation writers to look at dissertations, but that doesn't really get beyond, again, the community of your fellow graduate students who want to see another dissertation in your field. I do get emails from ProQuest telling me how many people have read my dissertation over time, and it is not a ton. So as a book, it could certainly get much further than via ProQuest. And there's such a difference between what you can do in a book and a dissertation as well. Of course, there's so much in the dissertation form that is specifically geared toward exactly the path through a PhD and the information you need to provide, what you need to show you understand about how your work fits into the scholarly community, that you can, you know, you can take out a lot of the material that isn't necessary for a book. You can add back in so much personal experience and anecdote that, you know, kind of underlines the reason you wanted to undertake the research in the first place. It can be a really fulfilling, I find, experience for those who turn their dissertation into a book.
And as you're talking, I'm thinking, or I'm hoping the listeners are hearing, you don't just take your dissertation and say, okay, it's done. My committee signed off on it. Now let's just publish it as a book, right? There's work to be done.
Exactly. Yeah. Any form you take, and we can talk through some of the differences between, you know, the different forms it can take, this progression from dissertation to other published piece of writing. But no matter which one it is, it is going to be a very different text than the one you submitted to your PhD. And, you know, again, that in part because a dissertation has to do such specific things. I mean, the way you talk about, say, your methodology, if you're doing a qualitative study, you know, you're going to be citing Creswell and all these, you know, foundational qualitative theorists. And that's just not going to be necessary in any book, whether it's academic or for a more general audience. So that's one thing. But I think people also think a little too much sometimes about the burden of doing that and not enough about the opportunity that that presents, because, you know, taking a step back and seeing what your work could become outside of the confines of the dissertation format is really exciting as well.
And I think that's such an important point. I just interviewed Dr. Paul Shaw, who got his PhD in music, and he talked about turning that into a book. He got a publisher and really explained, you know, the dissertation had to be so specific and you have to write within these confines. And now you've got this freedom. You've already done all the research. The hard part is really over. Now there's work to be done for sure. It's going to take some time, but now this is when you get to really be creative and really express yourself. And like you point out in the book, find your voice, because often your voice gets lost after so many revisions through different committee members' comments.
Absolutely. Yeah. Ultimately, you need to please your advisor first and foremost to get the degree. And that can lead to, you know, needing to work to exactly their writing standards as well as, you know, their supervision of your content. So it's really nice to be able to think, how did I originally want to write this? What are the parts? And especially those more personal details that are, you know, superfluous to a dissertation, but that really made up the reason you wanted to start the research. Those are exactly the things that can come into the book.
And I love this idea of publishing as a book. I didn't do that. 25 years ago, it was all about publish in the top tier journal article so you can get that on your CV, right? So you take your dissertation when you're done. You do give yourself a little break. That was okay. But yeah, more than about 3 months go by and your advisor's, you know, reading your phone going, what's happening with that article? You could break it up maybe into multiple articles and start that process of turning what is usually more than 100 pages into something a fraction of that. I, in preparation for this podcast, I went back. I'm like, how long was the dissertation anyway? How long was the journal article I published? My dissertation was 248 pages and the journal article I published was 24. So there's a lot of slicing and dicing that happens when you're taking this tome of a work and revising it to be publishable in a journal article.
Definitely. And that's, I would say, one of the most important first steps to take is deciding article or book or both. And it's very field dependent, of course. So, you know, you want to be looking at what your colleagues in your field are doing. And of course, again, with goal in mind, is it academic or is it industry or is it something else? But you can also think about it in terms of the exigency and quickly you can do something. Well, you know, if you think you can do an article and a book, then it's a great practice to start with an article, which you can out a bit more quickly than the whole process of revising for a book. I would say another first consideration is, you know, whether your dissertation is traditional 5-chapter format based around a specific research study or whether it's a little bit more of a thematically structured dissertation, something more in the humanities, like mine was very much based around the literary texts I was working with, which made it lend itself even more easily to separate chapters just became separate articles. If it's more that 5-chapter format, sometimes then it's more this whole thing gets condensed into an article that takes that same format. So looking at the dissertation as a whole and then thinking, you know, what's the next step and then what's my ultimate and are those the same thing or how many pieces of writing does this become? And while I'm thinking of it too, if you're thinking of the book being a long-term goal, you want to think about how much of it can have been published elsewhere first. Some academic presses will want only a certain percentage of it to have been published as articles in advance of that. So a consideration as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I would also like to encourage the listeners, reach out to your advisor, your chair, get their advice about what would be appropriate, what they would suggest in terms of strategy. I know for me in my department and in my field at the time, it was pretty typical that your chair would become second author on the article. But as part of that, they really mentored you through the process of getting published in a top tier journal because it's often not straightforward. There are often revisions. You're used to revisions now, but there are often revisions. There can be rejections, and you have a story about that in the book. So is that still happening nowadays? You work across so many disciplines where students or recent graduates, I should say, are working with their advisor on a publication.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that's pretty field dependent as well. I would say the more science-based the dissertation, the more likely it is to take that form of advisor becomes second author on publication. But across fields, I would say, depending on how your relationship with your advisor was, there should be at least someone on your committee that you could discuss this with. I would say I see a lot of people speaking to colleagues in their department and members of their committee and being put in touch with somebody that they know at a specific journal or a specific press who can, you know, at the very least, put them in touch with the right person at that organization. So I think it's absolutely always worth reaching out to your advisor and or other members of the committee in your department to see what introductions they can make and what advice they can offer as well, since they're very familiar with the document, but not quite as intimate with it as you are as its writer. So they have a little bit more clarity as to, you know, what can this become?
Yeah, kind of that third party perspective. They may also have suggestions on which journals to submit to. I know many journals won't allow you to be submitting to multiple journals right at the same time. So you kind of feel like you're putting all your eggs in one basket. And how do you choose? What kind of advice do you give?
Yeah, absolutely. So I always tell people, look at your reference list. You know, what are the journals that come to mind first that you cited many articles from that you really respect as a journal? So I think starting from a place of the ones that you know the best is a great list. And then unless there's, you know, some huge rush where you want to make sure that you have the best chance possible of getting to the first journal you submit to, I always tell people to submit to the best one that they think is a good fit. Obviously, you know, make sure that you're work meets the parameters of the journal and that you're trying to reach the same readership. But I always tell people that there's no reason not to submit to the best possible one because, you know, even if you get a rejection, you're likely to get comments that'll help you improve it for your next submission. You know, and you may be surprised by getting a revise and resubmit from a top journal in your field. And I would always say the ones you know, the ones you respect, and then aim for the top first.
And those rejections can give you valuable, valuable information. I've published with students where I say, go for the gold, but the feedback that we get with the rejection then allows for this revision. Then it's accepted at the next tier journal, you know, right away. And I know mine was revise and resubmit, I think twice. It felt like this thing was going on forever. Probably suppressed a lot of the details. But, you know, I remember thinking, I don't want to touch this document ever again. I remember thinking I can't do another revision, but like you encourage in your book, don't let too much time pass. Give yourself a break, but while it's still fresh, while you're still kind of on the roll, get it done. I promise you, you will be glad that you did. I don't think you've probably ever had any student come back and say, oh yeah, that wasn't a good use of my time.
No, never. Absolutely. And it's so important to find that balance. Like you gotta rest a little, you've got to get a little bit of clarity, but the longer you wait, the harder it is to go back to it as well. And, you know, it can feel like a lot of time waiting a few months for a journal to get back to you, but those months will pass whether your dissertation is gathering dust on the shelf or propping up your computer for a Zoom meeting or being put through a peer review process with the end goal of being published.
Yeah. And, you know, I think people are probably used to getting feedback from their committee in a relatively, reasonable amount of time. But some of these journals, the reviews do take quite a while. So you can think of that as your break. You know, you can revise it, cut it down, get it out there, knowing you've got some time to rest and relax and go on vacation and, you know, whatever, organize those kitchen cupboards that haven't been organized for 4 years. Before the either acceptance or revise and resubmit or rejection comes back. So thinking about that, this isn't a fast. If it is fast, they should probably be wary, right? There are some companies out there wanting to capitalize on recent graduates who want to publish their work. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So I would say the first thing to be really cautious of is if it doesn't feel like they're spending enough time investing in getting your research out to experts in your field for peer review, then that's the most important, I would say, part of the process to keep an eye on, because you want to realize that they're selecting individuals who know something about this topic, getting the document over to them and waiting for substantive commentary. I would first keep an eye on what the peer review process looks like. The other thing that is getting increasingly complicated is, you know, whether a journal expects the author to pay for publication. And I used to say that's definitely a red flag. Don't publish with those types of journals. But where we are in terms of moving toward open access makes that a little bit more complicated. So that's, again, going to be field dependent. Again, in more of the hard sciences, that's going to be more acceptable. So I would say if you're ever being asked to pay to get your article published, that's where I would really, really go to your advisor and other colleagues in your field. And does this seem right? And, you know, if it's a journal you know well, if your advisor has published in it, if they say, yeah, unfortunately, that's just the way it is because we're trying to move into an open access model, that's fine, go for it. That's the only instance in which I would say.
You know, Lauren, I was the same. I used to say, if they're asking you to pay, run. But then this whole open access thing started. And there may be a lot of people listening that have never heard of this before. Open access. Do you want to just explain that quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's been a model where libraries and institutions have been the ones paying. And there's a movement to try to make more knowledge more accessible to more people, which is a great goal. But then we get stuck in the who pays for it. And I think some of the big open access publishers, their goal is that the institution that is supporting the scholar is the one who's going to pay for that research to be conducted and published. But we're kind of stuck in a middle ground in some instances where the library who wants to have the published article isn't prepared to pay. The institution who supports the scholar isn't prepared to pay. And so the poor scholar gets in the middle who, you know, wants or needs the publication. There are, you know, huge pros and cons to it. Ultimately, you know, the goal of making knowledge available to more people is great, but I think we're stuck in a little bit of a tricky period where, yes, but who pays for that to happen?
So it is possible that you're going to be accepted to a completely legitimate journal, but they may be asking you to pay, just like Lauren suggested. Ask your network, ask the people you know, love, and trust if this sounds like the right decision for you, and go from there.
As long as, you know, if you've got a senior scholar in your field saying, yes, that's fine, then that's what I would consider it. It's not going to be worth it if your advisors and those you trust and get a fee say no.
Lauren, I want to thank you for coming on today and talking about why a recent graduate should want to publish their dissertation and some of their options. But before we wrap up the episode, I want to ask if you've got a favorite quote or some final words of wisdom that you want to leave with the audience.
So I would say, and I believe it's in our book as well, the absolute best piece of advice I received pre-graduate school was from one of my favorite undergraduate professors. And when I told him I was applying to graduate school, he said, "Great, but make sure you feel like you're living your life while you're in graduate school. If you feel like you need to wait until you finish this degree for your life to start, work." And I really attribute a lot of my happiness during the process to that.
And that's a great way to live life, whether you're in a doctoral program or not, right? I'll make sure in the show notes that people have all your contact information, as well as the contact information for dissertation editor, who you do offer a service of helping recent graduates turn their work, their scholarly work, into either books or articles.
We do, yeah. And we tailor that to the individual's goals. And we have a really strict academic integrity policy. So we'll ask first, you know, where they want to publish. If it's for tenure track, we'll offer editorial support. And if it's for something else, we'll offer, you know, a more full service. We'll help you do a lot of the legwork of turning this into your book or article for academic, traditional, self-publication, or any form of article. And I would just reiterate that it's worth getting it out there.
Thanks so much again for your time today.
Thanks so much for listening, and I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Until then, if you're looking for more ways to invite joy in your journey, check out the free resources at expandyourhappy.com. You'll find downloads like an article I wrote titled "The Doctoral Journey, 12 Things You Need to Know That They Probably Won't Tell You." You'll also find a PDF that organizes all podcasts by the 7 steps detailed in the Happy Doc Student Handbook, which you can also find on the website. Finally, if you're looking for a Happy Doc student swag, I've got that too. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and YouTube channel, and if you want to make my day, rate and review so that together we can change the way doctoral education is delivered and experienced. Hey, one more thing. Just a quick reminder that the information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only.